And today on the podcast, we've got Aliyah Yassir. Welcome, Aliyah.
Thank you, Ben. It's good to be here.
Yeah, excited to chat with you. Before we get started, I just want to acknowledge that I am producing this podcast on the unceded stolen lands of the Klamen, Komaks, Klehus, and Homokol First Nations, who were one Coast Salish tribe before we white settlers came in and separated them into reserves. Grateful to be able to produce this podcast on the unceded lands. So today we're off to Pakistan and to learn all about the behavior analysis, autism, and just sort of life in Pakistan with Aliyah. So maybe to get started, Aliyah, you could just tell us a little bit about yourself, kind of where you are, who you are, and kind of how you got into the field of ABA.
Thank you, Ben, and good to be here with you. First of all, about Pakistan, it's a beautiful country with lots of beautiful landscapes. Few people might want to know. It's in the border, close to China, India. So we have a beautiful landscape, very hardworking people. And I'm a behavior analyst. I'm a BCABA based in Karachi, Pakistan, which is a coastal city. So basically, I got into the field of ABA 16 to 17 years back when I was basically in the education field. I was a teacher in a college, and I found students who needed help. They were not speaking, their behavior was off, that sort of thing. And what I found out, there was, not much support in Pakistan at that time. Then we moved on to Middle East, specifically in Saudi Arabia. There also I worked with a few schools and found, a little bit about ABA, behavior therapists, how they are working with the kids and how they are trying to include them in our society, our education system. So that got me inspired. And, it was very interesting how much it was impacting their life and how much they were able to speak and learn and, with other children, their behavior was very much, improved. So that got me inspired, and I learned ABA, and the more I learned about it, the more I wanted to learn more about it, that sort of thing. So it's a great field. Basically, it found me, applied behavior analysis.
Nice. And so you say you were in what, special education before that, basically, or what were you doing before ABA?
No, I was I was a master's in computer science.
Okay.
And totally unrelated to
right.
applied behavior analysis or special education. But in my career, I saw many children who were behind other children, basically, and they needed help. So that got me interested. And what applied behavior analysis was doing, we found shadow teachers and support system and inclusion experts. They came to our class and, they were helping those children out. So basically that got me interested in the field of applied behavior analysis. And I wanted to learn more that what they were doing was totally amazing.
And were you working mostly with kids, with autistic kids?
Basically, that was a general education classroom.
Okay.
With many children who were on the spectrum or slow learners or typical children, that sort of thing. I had to work with all. So in Saudi Arabia as well, it was very hard to find behavior therapists or inclusion experts. So I had to learn myself there as well. And then I just realized that how wonderful this field is. And so I did the RBT course. I found it online. It was a wonderful experience. And, this was very interesting for me. And I thought that this is the field which I have to go in and learn more about.
Neat. Do you remember which RBT course you took?
Yeah, it was, Relias.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
At that time?
Yeah, yeah.
Gotcha. It was very famous, yeah.
Yeah, yeah. No, yeah. I remember that. I worked at a company that used the Relias RBT training. So, yeah, no, it is very good. Neat. Right on. So, where did you go to school?
Well, in Pakistan, basically, I was, master's in computer science from university, Sarawak University of Science and Technology. And then I worked here as well in Pakistan in Fauji Foundation College as a lecturer for a few years. And then we moved to Middle East, basically. So that kind of stuff.
Yeah. And then where did you...
Totally unrelated.
Yeah,
totally.
Where did you go to school for ABA though? Or where did you get your training in ABA?
So after learning a lot in RBT and, spending 6 and 7 years as an RBT after, passing the certification, I just took the decision and, because the BACB was closing certification for outside the US and Canada and few specific countries. So I really wanted to take this opportunity and go a step further. So I went to University of West Florida online degree in applied behavior analysis coursework. And that suited me with my work as well, work schedule and online courses. So that was good, basically.
Gotcha.
That was an amazing experience.
And then you would have needed supervision to get the BCABA credential. Did you do that in Saudi Arabia?
If you're planning on collecting continuing education credits for this episode, you'll need to enter the three secret words at www.cbiconsultants.com/shop. The first secret word is Pakistan.
No, basically, I worked in Pakistan. We came back from Saudi Arabia because we were missing our country. And there were a few rules which were, changed and we were uncomfortable with. So we decided to move back in Pakistan. And here I started a therapy setup, a small therapy setup. And then I found a great supervisor in Dallas, Texas.
Oh, wow.
And she supervised me for my fieldwork hours. Basically, we don't have many supervisors in Pakistan. So we have to rely on US and supervisors abroad. Right.
And what was that experience like being in Pakistan, getting supervised by someone in Dallas?
It was great. Few things, I was like shocked, like this should be applied. This is it. Mm-hmm. Why didn't I know that before?
Yeah,
that
sort
of thing. Yeah. And the written plans and everything and stuff, it was great. We don't do that in Pakistan, basically. Mm-hmm. The supervision stuff, it's not very emphasized. We get the training and the coursework, but not specifically the supervision part,
right.
Like this is so important for your education. The practical experience was truly amazing. They have other kind of level than I could have experienced here in Pakistan.
Neat. So how long now have you been running your center in Karachi? How long has your center been open?
Well, it's been like 6 to 7 years. I have been very busy with my education and training. So, that sort of thing, not a big center, just a consultancy type thing, which I had. And, once per week or twice per week, that sort of thing now, which I am doing. Otherwise, it's been 6-7 years, total, like that.
So are you still in school?
No, actually, I'm not. I finished my coursework, then I applied for the exam, and I was approved for the BCABA exam instead of BCBA exam because my degree wasn't approved by the BACB. So, and now everything is closed.
Right. So you had a master's degree, but they didn't think it was good enough, essentially.
Yes, exactly.
Gotcha. And so since then, you've gotten the IBA certification as well?
Yes. Basically, I was a BCABA, and right now we do not have any organization in Pakistan. Credentialing behavior analyst. We are basically at a baby step level, you know, very initial level. So we have the IBAO, who are very supportive towards behavior analysts and disseminating ABA around the world ethically. So I am a proud member of IBAO. And right now I am an IBA, and also I am an IBA coursework provider and an IBT coursework provider as well as a CEU provider for the IBAO. And this is what option we have right now. In Pakistan, we do not have our own organization, that sort of thing in Pakistan, but we will get there soon.
Well, let's talk about that. So what is sort of the state of ABA in Pakistan? Like, how long have people been doing ABA? You know, how many people are practicing? How do people pay for services? That kind of thing.
Okay, so Ben, this is a very interesting and detailed question. So, if I look at the components or the main stakeholders of applied behavior analysis therapy, and go one by one and have a overview of those stakeholders, then that would be better. Sure. So first of all, if we look at the clients or the children, I have a Pakistan Autism Society report of 2020. That there are almost 350,000 children on autism spectrum disorder in Pakistan right now, and maybe more, because it is diagnosed, it is underdiagnosed a lot. So probably it's more than that. And other disabilities, if you add on, then there are many children, you know, like. And what about the centers? We have, actually, there is no real data which we have. I tried to find something, but there was a list or something, that kind of stuff. I could not find it. So basically, it's a speculation that there are 400 to 500 centers total in Pakistan with every kind of therapy and accepting every kind of children. We are not just talking about ABA centers. If we talk about ABA centers, then there are only like 25, around 25 more or less. Still, we do not have a specific data on those centers, how many are there, but there are, you know, specific to ABA therapy, and the rest are, kind of mix and match type therapy, you know, speech therapists are opening ABA as side therapy, or an occupational therapist is opening as a side therapy, that sort of thing. So basically, ABA is, very, very, you know, at the initial stages, it needs to get, more recognized in Pakistan. Still, the degree is not recognized at the university level. Right now, if I look for a applied behavior analysis degree, there are none basically provided by any university in Pakistan. No coursework is provided, nothing in applied behavior analysis. If there are some university courseworks, there are on psychology or behavioral psychology or that kind of stuff, but it is totally different from the ABA which we study in US or Canada, that sort of thing. So basically there's very less government support as well. You know, if you are looking at the government level support, there are laws, policies, and, you know, like I was reading through that this should be done and that should be done, that sort of thing, policies. But, you know, like very few centers are developed by the government in physical locations. And those two are not for applied behavior analysis specifically. Those are for general type of therapies, that sort of thing. And also, if I look for a caregiver, basically caregiver is a very important stakeholder or a concerned party in a applied behavior analysis service. So if I look for parents or caregivers, they do not know what applied behavior analysis is, or they do not even want to get their child recognized as having autism spectrum disorder, because it is, you know, sort of like felt to be as a taboo in the society that your child is not talking or he's autistic, that sort of thing. So they try to hide the diagnosis. They do not reach the that kind of therapy, which should be, you know, done for the child, early intervention therapy. Basically, they hide the diagnosis and they do not go for diagnosis. And they sort of like say that he will talk. He's just a late talker. He's just a late bloomer. His grandfather was, you know, he stopped at 7 years of age. So that's not a big deal. And the early intervention phase is gone for the child, basically. And then, you know, we need a lot of education at the parent level as well. There's a lot of illiteracy going on. There's a lot of pseudoscience going on. You know, they do not know what applied behavior analysis it is, what credentials are, what certifications are, how it can be damaging for your child if it's not done properly without supervision, and what therapies do they need, that sort of stuff. You know, they need a lot of literacy, basically. So this is it. If we look at the insurance companies, there are none, basically. So none is covered. The therapies are not covered. So the caregivers have to pay out of their own pocket for the therapist. So what they do is they try to look for the cheapest ones, you know, which they can find.
Yes.
That sort of thing. And well, what people do, the therapists, is that they just take the 40-hour initial training in applied behavior analysis, and they just open up their centers or their private practice or home-based sessions, whatever. And parents are happy that they're getting the applied behavior analysis services, which they need, basically. But that's not true. Because of illiteracy, they need to get educated about it. So if I look at the BACB website, there are a total of 100 RBTs, and those two are, some are active and some are non-active. And there are new IBTs which are being formed, you know, international behavior therapists. They do not go for exam, proper IBAO exam mostly. Like, for example, if I have, if I'm talking about myself, I have, you know, like, trained about 100 IBTs up till now. And almost very few of them have gone for supervision part and IBAO certification exam part. You know, most of them are just, you know, they just take the 40-hour training and leave, that sort of thing. So we have a mushroom growth of therapists, but no proper supervision. And the last part, if I talk about, is about supervisors, basically. If I look at the BACB website, I found 16 in total in Pakistan, and maybe a few are abroad, outside the country. So supervisors are not enough in number. And when they are not enough supervisors, they charge a lot. And you know, they cannot physically supervise or remotely supervise the supervisees. So that kind of stuff is going on in applied behavior analysis, which is needed to be corrected. What do you think about it, Ben? about the ethical parts of applied BMA analysis?
Yeah, no, that's a good question. You know, the story you're telling is not uncommon in a lot of the countries kind of outside of North America, and essentially a lot of the countries that are outside of the BACB's sort of purview. As you said, they're, it's basically what, Canada, US, Australia, UK, maybe one other place too, that they provide certification in, and everywhere else has to do their own thing. And I've had a few conversations. So I've talked to a couple of folks in Ghana and Nigeria, and a couple other countries, Egypt. And what seems to be a common theme here is that is exactly what you say. So these people come in, they take an RBT course or an IBT course or some kind of that, you know, the 40-hour training that you talk about. Quite often they take the online versions from America. I know groups like the Autism Partnership Foundation have a free one. There's a couple free ones now. So obviously a lot more folks are probably taking those courses. But then, like you said, they don't get supervision. And then they go off and start their own companies. And it's sketchy, right? It's certainly under the IBAO and BACB ethics codes, they're breaking a lot of rules, right? By going off and sort of starting their own thing after 40 hours of training. You know, on the other side of the coin, there's a lot of other folks that don't get any training at all, right? And start companies and do this sort of thing. So, you know, is 40 hours better than nothing? I don't know. What do you think?
Well, it's better than nothing if you have told the parents, you know, like, I am 40-hour trained therapist. So that is enough, you know. You just have to tell the parent the reality, the truth. What you are, basically, you have to showcase what you are, you know, yes. Not more than what you are.
Yes.
That sort of thing. Then yeah. I think it's fine.
Yeah. And do you find that it's that people are doing the opposite and, you know, they have the 40-hour course, but they're saying they're behavior analysts and, you know, and all that sort of thing?
A lot, you know, I get, you know, like surprised, like, oh, that person is a behavior analyst. I do not find her, you know, like a behavior analyst, you know, behavior analyst or behavior consultant, that word, as we were discussing previously, behavior consultant, you can call yourself, right? Yeah. With 40-hour training. And, you know, it's very impressive if you hear about it, you know?
Yeah. Well, strangely, I mean, maybe unexpectedly for you, that's the same case here in Canada, right? So even here in Canada, there are folks that call themselves behavior consultants that don't even have the 40 hours, that just have a high school diploma. And that's it. And they're able to, yeah, because there's no requirements for calling yourself a behavior consultant. So anyone can do it. And you're right. It sounds really professional. It sounds really like an expert type title, behavior consultant. It sounds like, you know, a lot. And that can be misleading to parents, right?
Yes. So basically, you know, everyone have their own ethics, you know, they are working around their own ethics. And, you know, like when you do not have laws applied at the government level and no one is checking you, you know, I can do whatever I want right now. You know, I have my own personal ethics and ethics code, and that's it. You know, I'm following nothing, basically. If I haven't given exam in any organization, IBAO or BACB, then, you know, I'm free. I'm free to do whatever I want, that sort of thing.
And if families aren't educated and don't know sort of the difference, then they're not going to question it, right?
Yes, basically parents, even if they are educated, the thing is affordability, since there is no insurance coverage. So what they try to do is, you know, find the best they can do. So there is a lot in better situation in Pakistan than it was before, 10 years before, when we didn't even have other services like speech therapy services or occupational therapy services, you know, very rare people we had. And autism was not even diagnosed, like 10 years before or 15 years before, there was very little support. So at least right now, there is acceptance being created in the society. Situation is getting better. And I'm very hopeful for future that, you know, if we try to, you know, like send our message everywhere, then that would be better, you know, like people get to know more. And because they know more, they can question more. And that would be better for the field.
The second secret word is problem.
Basically, we need to train the parents or the caregivers, you know, more training, go Autism for Partnership Foundation course is free. Take that course and start questioning the therapist, you know, that sort of thing. If we train the parents, then they realize what can be done. That sort of thing.
Yeah, yeah. And are you doing that? Are you providing any training to parents?
Yes, basically, I always, provide trainings for parents for free, 40-hour training. I always include and try to include the parents. But the thing is that, you know, after 1 or 2 days, they, get tired or something. The intensity of the training is too much for them. And they, they cannot, complete the training. That sort of thing. But a few parents, you know, which I am very proud of, you know, they go for certification as well.
Wow.
They are very interested in the field, but they are very few, very few. Otherwise, that sort of thing is going on.
What's involved with the IBAO? So what does one need to do to get certification as an IBT? And then what did you need to do to get certification as an IBA?
Yeah, basically, this is a very good question. IBAO is an organization basically aimed to accommodate as many cultural diverse people as possible. So basically, they have a very great respect for you if you belong to another culture, which is the thing I love the most about IBAO. And for their certifications, they have full information available on their website. If you are an IBT, first you have to complete the 40 hours coursework. After that, you have to work for 300 hours under supervision of an IBA or a BCBA or a behavior analyst, certified behavior analyst. And after that, you have to get the CEUs, continuing education units. So most people don't even know what CEUs are. We can talk a little bit about them. And after that, you have to pass the exam for IBT. For IBA, this is a whole bigger lot of training. 270 hours of training and 1,000 hours of practice with 50 hours of supervision and 12 CEUs, a lot more work is needed to be done, and you have to practice a lot. So basically, if you compare the both two credentials, this is 40 hours we're talking against 270 hours. 300 hours of practice against 1,000 hours of, programming practice, not just practice, individual practice. So if someone thinks that after 40-hour training, we are good to go, we know everything about ABA, it's not, you know, there's a lot more to be learned in ABA. And I myself learn a lot every day, you know, every day if I read something, a new article or hear a new podcast, I learn new things about ABA. So it is a continuous journey, definitely. And this is in the form of continuing education units, basically. Smaller, would you like to elaborate a little about CEUs, Ben?
Sure. But you want me
would
to?
Would you like to?
You want me to?
Yeah. Yes, yes.
And what do you want to know?
Basically, I was going through your website and I found, you know, really wonderful CEU options available there, you know, continuing education. I was like surprised, like these are for everyone, BACB and IBAO and QBA, whatever CEU you want, basically. So people want to know what CEUs are. This is the number one question, what they ask, you know, then what is CEU basically?
Right, right. So, I mean, CEU stands for Continuing Education Unit, right? And, you know, continuing education just means that once you do your basic training, whether it be your 40 hours for your RBT or your 270 hours for your IBA, that the learning doesn't stop. Just like you said, you're always learning. You're always listening to new things and reading new things. And you're all, it's, you know, I think, and this is a problem sort of everywhere, I think, that people, like, especially like even in North America with the BCBA credential, we have a lot of young folks now that are getting their BCBAs, right? So the number of BCBAs has just grown like exponentially, right? There's so many more BCBAs in the last sort of 10 years than there have been kind of ever, right? And a lot of these people, when they get their certifications, we hear a lot about this thing called imposter syndrome. Have you heard that term?
Not really.
So imposter syndrome, I mean, it's English. It's obviously it's an English phrase, and I don't know how it would translate, but essentially, when one has imposter syndrome, they suddenly feel like, you know, they don't know anything. They don't know how to do their job. You know, I'm a BCBA now, but I'll never be as good as someone else, as that next BCBA. I'll never be as good as my supervisor. I'll never be good as that person that is on the podcast. I'll never be good as that person that gave the webinar. There's too much to understand in ABA. I'm never going to know it all. It's this kind of sort of self, you know, deprecating language where you basically talk bad about yourself in your head, that you're never going to be good enough. This is what they call imposter syndrome. So the idea is that you feel like an imposter, like someone that shouldn't be doing this kind of work. You're not a real BCBA. You're an imposter BCBA. This is what imposter syndrome is. And so And it's a big problem right now. It leads to a lot of burnout. A lot of folks are leaving the field, but because of it. But what folks need to understand is that once you get your RBT, your IBT, your BCBA, your BCABA, your IBA, whatever, your QBA, once you get that certification, that is like the minimum. That is like now you start to learn. Right? That's sort of like the very basic of basics. Like just because you have an IBA doesn't mean you're going to be really good at what you do, right? You still have to practice. You still have to learn more. And so what a lot of these credentials have now, which I think is important, and we see this across the sectors, like lots of different fields. Doctors do this. Psychologists do this. Engineers do this. You know, math teachers do this. Everybody that has sort of a, you know, some sort of certification usually is required to take some kind of continuing training to maintain their certification, to keep learning, right? Otherwise it goes bad. I mean, if you take a course, if you learn to get your RBT certification and you never take any more training, you're going to start to forget what you've learned. Your skills are going to start to weaken. You're going to lose knowledge. So sometimes you often need refreshers. You need to learn stuff over and over again so it stays in your head, and becomes your kind of part of your day to day practice. And so CEUs are really important. And you know, depending on the credential, you know, there's different kinds of CEUs. And the nice thing about CEUs is they can be in almost kind of anything, right? As long as it's somehow related to the work you're doing. So, you could, for ABA, you can have CEUs that are really specific, like you were talking about before we hit record. You can have really specific CEUs, like on assessment, like on the VB map, or on the AFOLs or things like that. Or you can have, you know, CEUs on you know, functional analysis or differential reinforcement or any sort of concept in ABA. But you could also have CEUs on things that are sort of, you know, outside of ABA, but that are important. So, you know, how to work with families, CEUs on things like, you know, how to organize your files better, CEUs on how to work with sort of, you know, different groups and different cultures, you know, and you know, culturally responsive care. There's just so many things you can have CEUs on that will only sort of improve your work. So there's lots of different things folks can take CEUs on, and there's just so many different options available. I mean, there is a downside that there's a cost involved, right? But like you said, you know, again, before we hit record, there are lots of free CEU options out there. There are a lot of groups that offer, you know, like the Verbal Beginnings is a popular one for a lot of folks. They've done a really good job of marketing their monthly free CEU that they do. So every month they have a training course, and they offer a free CEU to everybody. And so that's a great way to get them. And you don't need, I think for the IBAO credential, the CEUs you don't need that many. Like, how many CEUs do you need as an IBA?
For an IBA, you need 12, basically.
12 in a year, yes. Or 12 in how long?
Before certification. And after, when you have passed the exam, then 20.
Once in 2 years, that's sort of 20 in, yeah. 2 years, right? And so,
yeah, that's
20. So you look again at these places that offer monthly free CEUs. Mm-hmm. Anyone can get all of their CEUs for free.
Yes,
all the required. So you can feasibly never have to pay for CEUs. So there are, mm-hmm, ways to get CEUs without paying for them too. So they are available to everyone. So yeah, I think they're good. You said you're an IBA. An IBA approved CEU provider?
Yes, I am, basically. What I wanted to add is you explained the CEU process so well that I would like to reemphasize that most people think that you are just reinforcing the child and ABA stops there, you know. Mm. If you know how to reinforce the child, you know, they're working and you're just, yep, giving them toffee and that's it, you know. You are doing ABA. So if you are talking about CEUs and such a detailed coursework, then obviously there must be a lot more to learn. And even if I am an IBA right now, I feel like, you know, I need the refreshers. I look at my notes, the old notes, and I realize, that sort of thing, you know, I have to dig out more. At that time, you know, I wasn't mature enough or that sort of thing, and now I have to study more. And there are advancements in applied behavior analysis, you know, which I learn about, like new things, new stuff, the best practices in ABA, the practical stuff, the ethical stuff. Everything is going at a, you know, very fast pace. Applied behavior analysis is a very dynamic pace, that sort of thing. So new stuff comes up, and you know, I try to dig out articles and podcasts on those things and readings, that sort of thing. And I just try to create that sort of thing, you know, the knowledge which I can convey to people. So I do provide CEUs occasionally. I would be providing more, but right now, you know, I have provided on ACE and PECS. This is what I learned also, and I refreshed myself as well, you know, when I provided it. You know, when you are teaching something, you are also teaching yourself and you're expanding, right, knowledge and sharing experiences with other people. You know, when other people share their experience, this is always new for me to learn from them, from my students as well. So it's a great field. You know, if you're really interested in the education field, in providing lectures and trainings and in an ethical way, then it's a great field. Applied behavior analysis is ever growing field, basically. So I love that part of IBO as well. You know, like for even the basic IVTs, they have made it mandatory for to gain CEUs, you know, like refresh their knowledge for renewal of their certification. Mm. So that's great, which cool. We did not have in the BACB as an RBT. That sort of thing.
Yeah, no, that's really good. So you're providing IBA supervision as well. So are you supervising people that want to become IBAs?
Yes, as a matter of fact, I am. Basically, I provide supervision as well. Supervision requirements are also very tough at my end. You know, I have to see their work, how they are writing reports. Mm. And what I find in my supervisees is that they do not get those kind of concepts in their coursework, basically. Mm. You know, coursework is just about the basic concepts and knowledge and MCQs and quizzes and that sort of thing. While in supervision, you have to work with the client and you have to apply those principles practically. You have to generate the reports, you have to write article summaries, you have to, plan out your session, do the assessments, data sheets, that sort of stuff, coursework, does not provide. So it's the job of supervisor, and a supervisor can train a better behavior analyst, basically. A lot depends on the supervisor as well.
Yeah. And so how many people are you supervising to become IBAs?
Well, at the moment, only two.
Yeah.
Because people, as I told you, in Pakistan, they usually do not go for that higher level certification. They do not realize how much it is needed. You know, they just take the 40-hour training and that's it. You know, they do not realize that they need the supervision. They need to go further inside the field and into their career. They should be able to work independently. As a supervisor, you know, I have many IBTs and I try to teach them that you have to work ethically. You have to work under supervision. You cannot work independently. This is what is needed to be taught by every supervisor in Pakistan, outside Pakistan, wherever you are. If you are providing supervision, you have to teach your supervisors that you cannot work independently. You have to take supervision ethically. That's how you work. So that thing is sort of lacking in Pakistan, that knowledge, and people just claim to be, you know, like big things, you know, like we are behavior consultants, that sort of thing, which is a big word. That sort of thing. So basically it's the job of the supervisor to teach those things, and people copy their teachers a lot. You know, when I remember myself in school, I used to copy my teachers a lot. You know, I used to copy their styles. So whatever you are, basically, as a supervisor, you are trying to create that person, another person, that sort of thing. And some people are reluctant in doing those detailed coursework, is that because applied behavior analysis is so new in Pakistan, it's been there only a few years, you know, like hardly 4 or 5 years, that sort of thing. So they are reluctant that will we be able to find jobs with the certification. You know, they are sort of like on a wait and see type of policy. Like, let's see, you know, do the short course and then let's see how it goes. And then maybe we are interested, that sort of thing. Plus, the certifications are so expensive for them. The work is so hard for them, that sort of thing. You know, there is a lot going on. So basically, not many people go for IBA, but I'm very proud of my students who are going for IBA. Trend is changing. The more supervisors you grow, the more this trend will change and applied behavior analysis will grow in our country.
Cool.
This is what I believe in.
No, that's ambitious and I hope you make it happen. You said there's a Pakistan Autism Society. Has that been around for a while?
Yes, it has been around for a while. Basically, there's not, you know, like these are sort of like organizations which are not very much like, you know, not there 10 years ago, you know. I'm happy that they are here now. But, you know, they are very young organizations, that sort of thing. People are doing better. But in applied behavior analysis, we do not have any organization right now in Pakistan. This is what I personally feel, that all the behavior analysts outside the country and inside the country, they should form at least one organization, a friendly organization, which you were also giving an idea. You know, we do not need licensure, just a group of people coming together and sharing ideas. That would be great. You know, this is what is happening, I think, in Canada as well. I really like that idea. Would you like to tell us a few things about Canada?
Sure. Yeah. I mean, I think a lot of folks are and tend to be surprised that, you know, ABA in Canada is not the same as ABA in the USA. In terms of, you know, I think it, you know, autism and whatnot is there's a lot more education on autism in Canada. I think a lot of folks, most folks here have heard of autism, know what it is. You know, I think the idea of sort of autism awareness isn't necessary anymore. It's more about acceptance now and kind of, you know, it was that sort of next level sort of in the kind of paradigm of inclusion. But the idea that ABA is the only, you know, sort of recognized intervention for autism is not something that is not a thing in Canada, right? So there are lots of different therapies, just like I think in Pakistan, lots of people go to SLPs and OTs and you know, psychologists and sort of whoever, you know, to kind of get different kinds of therapies. You know, there is a lot of parents have a lot of choice when it comes to sort of intervention, and you know, they don't have to choose ABA. But I think it is encouraged a lot of places. But as far as sort of, you know, I think the standard folks are looking for is regulation. So they folks would like the field to be regulated so that you ensure that you are getting sort of the best quality of services, you know, every single time. As well, you know, I think it can tarnish sort of the name of the field if you have different people with different levels of training and different skills practicing the same thing. Like, just like in Pakistan, you have RBTs saying they're behavior consultants and you have IBAs saying they're behavior consultants. That can be very confusing for people that are trying to, you know, purchase services. And if you don't know the difference, then of course you're going to pay for the cheaper RBT version, right? Because it costs less money. And if you don't know the difference, you know, then sort of what's going to stop it. And so I think the idea behind regulation is that, you know, it sort of guarantees that, you know, folks are getting what they paid for, right? Folks are getting someone with a master's degree. They're getting someone with, you know, a lot of hours of training and a lot of hours of supervision and ongoing supervision and so on and so forth, which is great. And in the US, I think there are a lot of states that have this regulation in place. And so you'll often hear folks being referred to as licensed behavior analyst or LBA. And that's sort of, that's an American term, generally speaking, because they have their BCBA, which is a, you know, accreditation credential. But then on top of that, they have to get their LBA, which, and I don't know exactly how it works, but I do know that there are, in some states, there are more exams you have to take, more training you have to take, more money you have to spend to sort of get those credentials. You know, there's other things, you know, like criminal record checks and things like that, I imagine, that are in place too, that ensure that. And so in those states, in the US, autism ABA therapy is generally funded through insurance, right? And there are lots of different insurance companies in the USA. And, but generally speaking, as I understand it, in those states where you have to be a licensed behavior analyst.
The third secret word is supervision.
You sort of, as I understand it, insurance will only pay for the licensed behavior analyst services. So if you have a BCBA and you don't have a license, then your services won't get paid for, possibly. So that's kind of how it works in the States. In Canada, it's different. Insurance doesn't pay for ABA services in Canada either. And it differs from province to province. So in Canada, we have 10 provinces and then two territories, they're called. And each province or territory decides how they're going to pay for those services. There's no sort of national autism sort of strategy or plan, although I think there is a group working towards that, but that's not in place yet. And so right now we have one province called Ontario, and folks outside of Canada will know Ontario is the province that has Toronto and the CN Tower. That seems to be the thing that most folks outside of that don't know Canada seem to know about Canada. So Toronto is the capital city of Ontario. And so Ontario is the only province that has regulation and is going for licensure. All the other provinces don't have that. So I'm in a province called British Columbia, which is on the West Coast. The major city in British Columbia is Vancouver, for folks that might have heard of that. And there's no regulation here. So just like in Pakistan, there are people here calling themselves behavior consultants that are able to charge for services, and folks can there's also government funding. That's what it is. So the government pays for services. They give families a certain amount of money every year to pay for services, and families can use that for whatever they want. So they could use it for a behavior consultant. They could use it for a behavior analyst. They could use it for an occupational therapist, or they could use it for someone completely different, doing, you know, like social skills person or a life skills person or whatever. There's lots of different ways of sort of, you know, spending that money, but there's no sort of regulated way. So, but what we do have is, and the states, the US has this too, and a lot of other countries have these too, is we have behavior analysis associations. So these are kind of nonprofit societies, you know, groups essentially, where behavior analysts and RBTs and everyone in between, you know, can get together and sort of support each other. And so this might be as simple as, you know, just having another behavior analyst to call and ask a question of, or it might be more advanced where the whole association is advocating for more regulation with the government, right? We had a thing in British Columbia a couple of years ago where they were trying to change the funding model entirely for autistic children. And the way they were going to shift it, a lot of behavior analysts and parents believed it would result in less children getting services, essentially. So the Provincial Behavior Analyst Association got together and protested against it, went down to the Capitol and held up signs and tried to speak with the, you know, the ministers and the government folks and the premier and whoever to try to get that changed. And they were successful. They got it moved back. So it can be an advocacy organization as well. And so, you know, this, I think this would be a great move for Pakistan, for, you know, RBTs and IBTs and IBAs and QBAs and BCBAs and BCABAs and sort of everyone in between, you know, to get together and just start with a group, start with, you know, it could be as simple as a WhatsApp group or, you know, or, a, you know, a Google Meetup chat or a Facebook group. I've seen a lot of folks started that way. You know, or it could be, you know, a couple behavior analysts going for coffee, you know, at the local cafe and just having a conversation and starting there. But I think that's a great first step to provide more support for each other, find out what other people are doing, find out where the greatest needs are. I mean, there are so many different quotes about how, you know, groups of people can get more things done than just an individual person. So I think associations are a great first step towards all these bigger things that you're wanting to see in Pakistan.
Yes, definitely. And I love that idea, Ben. You know, actually, I was thinking about it, that licensure is the, you know, far away thing. It's the next step. Why don't we just go, you know, get together, as you said, get the coffee together.
Yeah,
it's winters, that sort of thing.
Yeah.
And we have friends, you know, I have friends personally. Yeah. But the thing is, you know, everyone is so busy in their life, you know, providing services and stuff. We have to, you know, think about the field, the collective benefit of a field. And association is a great idea, you know. Voices are heard. You know, if your voice is collective, then it is heard, basically. So this is a great opportunity for me to, you know, invite everyone, you know, on your podcast, through your podcast, whoever is listening, that let's just get together. Let's just chit chat more and learn more from each other and share ideas. You know, it's a great opportunity. Really,
so,
you know?
So is this an invitation? Do you want other behavior analysts in Pakistan to reach out to you?
I will reach out to them, basically. Okay. It's an invitation to collaborate, you know. I love how people are. They have so much education. They have so much talent in Pakistan. Just the, you know, like right support system is not there at the government level. So that's the reason. But we can do on personal level, you know. So I would definitely go and reach out everyone.
Nice. That's awesome. I love that. Cool. So what sort of I mean, we've already talked a lot about it already in sort of different parts of the conversation, but I'm curious sort of what where do you kind of, what's your sort of vision, dream sort of for the next, you know, 5-10 years for you and for ABA and for Autism Pakistan?
Well, for autism, it's very close to my heart. You know, when I look at children, you know, and I think about them, how they will be after 10 years, you know, I get blank, you know. A lot of work is needed to be done to create job opportunities for them, to create the right opportunities, education, you know, in their specific area of interest, because they can do a lot better with the right support. And ABA is the support. This is what I have seen in this science, you know. It's a science, basically. It's not pseudoscience, like some kind of medicine you are going to give to that child and they will get well in 1 week. It's not a disease. Autism is not a disease. It will get cured by therapies. And ABA therapy is the best so far I have found, you know, for autistic children, since they have behaviors to show. And we just can teach them how to work with the environment, basically. So applied behavior analysis, it should be, you know, more regulated. There should be an organization. There should be licensure, probably after 5 years, there should be more coursework at the university levels. Basically, right now, universities are not providing not even diplomas in applied behavior analysis. So that is what I want to see, a master's degree or a coursework or that sort of thing in applied behavior analysis, so that we see more supervisors, more independent practitioners, not just 40-hour training IBTs or RBTs. We need to go beyond that, you know, take a step further, because it is such a great science. It needs to be explored more at the family level. Families need support, basically. And also, I would like to see parents coming in and asking questions, getting education, the basic education. Basically, parents should not, you know, like consider their child as a, you know, taboo that, you know, we have to hide something, you know, he's autistic. No, we have to hide. How long will you hide? Basically, it's nothing to be ashamed of. They can do a lot better. And they have to come forward and advocate for their child in the support system, in the education system, in the job system. So basically, collective voices, this is what I want, my vision for this applied behavior analysis field, and accept this as a field, you know, because there is so much negativity right now, even in the US, if I see, because of some ill treatments in the past, you know, we are at that level in Pakistan, basically, very few practitioners are working ethically. Otherwise, mostly we see fat treatments, which are not applied behavior analysis, basically, not even close to it. So this is what I want to see, an improvement in image of applied behavior analysis and its recognition at the government level. You know, government need to recognize it as a science, and it they need to hire more therapists with ABA training. You know, if I see the government jobs, I do not find ABA jobs, you know, behavior therapist job, that sort of thing. So these things are, you know, like in Canada, as you were talking about, I was listening, you are far better, you know, because the field is recognized. Here in Pakistan, applied behavior analysis is sort of like, you know, an extra thing. You know, if you are doing, if you have a child with a speech delay, you will go to a speech therapist, and the speech therapist will recommend an occupational therapist, like, you know, for writing and reading and toilet training, go to an occupational therapist as well. And then when you have extra money, you think about ABA. Oh, I have heard about ABA, so let's try that as well. You know, that should not be done. ABA covers everything. Applied behavior analysis is so vast, you know, like you can explain better and how much, you know, it can change a person's life. You know, I have seen a lot of improvements in children, and I'm very hopeful about ABA services, you know, if they are recognized more.
Well, I think that's an awesome vision for Pakistan, and I think you'll get there. I mean, I think as long as, you know, folks like yourself are, you know, I think with you at the helm, you know, and folks like yourself who are, you know, excited to kind of get this growing, I think you'll do it. It's awesome. It's great. I always love having these conversations where in countries with folks in countries where ABA is sort of just getting started and just trying to kind of get their feet sort of in the door and try to make things happen. And you know, I think it's, you know, I think we're so used to here in Canada and the US, we, you know, we've had different versions of this around for decades, right? 30, 40, 50, 60 years. And so we've known about it for a long time. You know, I think sometimes we take for granted kind of that we're here where we are and how we got here. And so I think it's humbling and nice to hear, you know, from other folks that are kind of just getting their beginnings and starting to figure this stuff out. And, you know, I love the work you're doing, and I think it's going to be awesome. So, and I hope you have some luck getting more folks and getting an association together and starting some things out. This has been really cool. Really impressive. And I hope we can catch up with you again in a couple of years and see how things are going.
Well, I love your work, Ben. You know, I would like to personally thank you for this opportunity. And the work you are doing is great, you know, especially your podcast, which I have heard, you know, they are from new developing countries, you know. Yeah. So it's a lot of encouragement, basically. I love your work and I love your podcast. And I would appreciate, you know, people listening more to your podcast, you know. This is great stuff.
Well, thank you. That's so kind of you. Well, thanks so much for coming on the podcast, Aaliyah.
Thank you. Thank you for having me over.
Yeah.